"Let me just run this by my lawyer" is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you love Selena?
Like, really love?
Whether you saw her live, saw the movie as a kid, or saw her looks all over TikTok, there's no shortage of reasons to stan the Queen of Tejano.
And stan, we do over 3 whole episodes of our podcast, Becoming an Icon.
We're reminiscing as lifelong Selena fans, sharing hot takes and telling her story. Listen to Becoming an Icon on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Becoming an Icon.
We're on from 1 to 4. 1 to 4 every day now. And to hear the podcast, which you can hear anytime, right after the show, whenever you want, you go to the iHeartRadio app and click on podcasts and then type in John and Ken on Demand. John and Ken on Demand. And then you get the podcast, the whole thing, to do with it whatever you wish.
All right. A quick reminder that we are taking entries for Ghoul Pool 2023. Your 3 picks. Go to KFIAM640.com and you will see the link on our webpage, the John and Ken webpage, for you to enter your picks. I got quite a few actually last night, sending them to the John and Ken email. It's okay. I just forward them to Ray, but you want to get them directly to where they go to be stored for the data for this year. Use the link
right, because
on the webpage.
Sometimes Mr. Cranky throws out your submissions.
Deletes,
yes.
No, I literally reach into the computer and pull out your email.
Your
and rip
delete
it up.
Finger starts to twitch.
The chance for $1,000, John. Are you excited? The cash refill contest?
Yeah.
It's 15 minutes away with another keyword for the hour. Well, Brian Koberger is the man that they believe killed the 4 college students who went to the University of Idaho. It happened in Moscow on November 13th. Their bodies were discovered. It took until last week for police and investigators to arrest Brian Koberger, a PhD student at the University of Washington who lived just across the border near Pullman, but made his way back to Pennsylvania to be with his family for the holidays. That's where they arrested him, at his parents' home. Yesterday, he waived extradition. It won't be long before they return him to Idaho. And then we'll take a look at the case they have against him. But one thing we know, that DNA was key to his apprehension, along with that car, the white Hyundai. These were key clues for them to track him down. That explains why they took as long as they took to arrest the suspect. So we're going to talk about the DNA genealogy part with Cece Moore, chief genetic genealogist at Parabon Nanolabs and founder of DNA Detectives.
They've helped law enforcement solve more than 240 crimes. So let's get Cece on the air. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
Oh, we're great. We're fascinated by how this works, so we got a lot of questions for you.
All right, what's the first...
Well, I could talk about it all day.
Well,
so
we might do that. So first thing that the police do when they show up at the crime scene, they've got to capture the perpetrator's DNA. So what do they do?
That's correct. So they're going to have their crime scene investigators collect any physical evidence, hoping that the perpetrator's DNA is in there. They'll first take it to their crime lab, and they'll create the forensic profile that is used as evidence in court. That's not the one we use for investigative genetic genealogy. They'll first compare that against law enforcement databases, CODIS, looking for a match, someone who's already an identified offender. And in this case, it appears there wasn't a match. And then they can pretty quickly pivot to investigative genetic genealogy. But to do that, you have to go back to the crime scene DNA and reanalyze it from scratch using more advanced technology. And the crime labs don't have the capability to do that at this point. So they would have had to send that out to a private lab, which there are a few that do this, and then they would create a genetic genealogy profile that has probably hundreds of thousands of genetic markers. Typically, we're using up to about a million genetic markers. And then once that is created, they probably sent that back to the FBI since they were very closely working this case and they have their own genetic genealogy team. And they would have uploaded it to the two databases that we're allowed to use for law enforcement cases, which are Family Tree DNA and GEDmatch. There's a big misconception that we're using Ancestry DNA and 23andMe, but those companies have barred law enforcement from using their databases. And so we are limited to these two smallest databases that have agreed to work with law enforcement. And everyone in those databases has been notified that law enforcement is using that database, and they have been given the option to opt in or out of that. So it's important for people to understand we are not using random people's DNA who have no idea about this. You, if you're not in those two databases and you haven't opted in or not opted out, depending which database, then we can't use your DNA for these purposes.
I have my DNA in one of the databases, but one of the databases that doesn't share. I have hundreds of people, hundreds and hundreds of people on a list that I'm supposedly related to. And it goes like, I think up to sixth cousins.
Right.
How?
Yeah, you're not supposedly related. You are related to those people.
Well, all right. You're right. I am related to these people.
Yes.
Okay. I misspoke there. So I just don't trust anything or anybody anymore. That's my own bias.
But, I understand.
Okay. The DNA doesn't lie.
I'm related to hundreds of people. Some of them are sixth cousins. And
right.
It seems like it's a very tiny amount of DNA that they share with me. Is that enough to point them on the right path?
It is. And because you've seen your match list, you're much more familiar with what we're doing than a lot of people. Most people seem to think that we're just using one match to help solve these cases and that there's going to be a really close relative in the database. We're usually using very distant cousins. We're lucky if we get second cousin matches. We're more often working with third, fourth, fifth cousins and beyond. They share less than 1% of their DNA with that unknown suspect. So it's lots of tree building. It's looking for patterns, commonalities, overlaps, and hopefully common ancestors among those sharing DNA with that unknown suspect. So someone's DNA means nothing to me if I can't build their family tree. I have to be able to identify them and their parents and build back to second, third, fourth, great-grandparents. So we're building trees back into the 1800s, even 1700s, looking for those connections. So most people that would have had their DNA used for this type of investigation would never have even known the suspect. They would be so distantly related, they probably never even heard their names. Now, there are exceptions when we occasionally get a close match, but even then, we've got to use those more distant matches to vet that, make sure everything is telling us the same information and it's all pointing in one direction.
Now, you have to obtain the DNA from the suspect, too, though, to match what has gone through
right.
the genealogy tree, right?
Right. So once we've worked with that crime scene DNA and come up with a person of interest or several persons of interest, depending how big that family is and how much data we have to work with, then we give that over to law enforcement. And it functions as simply a tip. It's a lead generator. Now, of course, it's a highly scientific tip, but it still has to be treated the same way it would be if someone just called that name into Crime Stoppers. No one's being arrested based on genetic genealogy work alone. The law enforcement investigators are going to have to do their full traditional investigation, see if that is a person of interest or one of those people is a person of interest. Did any of them fit the age range? Are they the right gender? Did they live in the area? Did they drive a white Elantra? And then if they do identify someone from that that is a real person of interest, they have to follow that individual or somehow get their DNA, because an arrest can't be made based on the genetic genealogy lead. So they have to usually follow them, look for trash, surreptitious DNA, get that and take it back to their crime lab and compare it against that court admissible genetic profile that they created at the very beginning. That is what is used then for the basis of an arrest warrant. That's what gets presented in court.
So what do? They follow the suspect around.
Yes, pretty often, or they pull their trash. Most states allow law enforcement to pick up your trash off the curb. They pretend like they're, you know, trash men. And that's because you've legally abandoned that trash at that point. If some states don't allow that, in which case they have to follow the person around for a long time in some cases, waiting for them to drop a cup or a napkin or something that they can get DNA off.
So preferably something that they've wiped their mouth or nose with.
Yes.
Do people leave DNA just sitting in a room?
Absolutely. And that is why it's so incredibly shocking to me that this forensic science student, this criminology student, somehow thought that he could perpetrate this incredibly violent, intimate crime and leave without leaving his DNA behind. Anyone who has studied criminology should know you're going to leave some kind of DNA. Maybe he got cut himself while he was in the frenzy stabbing them. That's super common, that the knife slips. Someone supposedly fought back. It's been reported one or more of the victims fought back. They could have scratched him. They could have injured him. He could have just left a single hair behind at that scene or skin cells. And they still would be able to identify him. Even if he's not in the law enforcement database, we now have investigative genetic genealogy, which greatly expands that scope, that reach. You know, with the law enforcement database, you've got to get that exact person. With investigative genetic genealogy, if we have your second and third cousins, we're good to go. It might take a few hours. It might take weeks or months, but you will be identified. And so I just don't know how he thought he was going to get away with this.
All right, hang on.
Cece, hang on. We got more to talk to Cece Moore with. She's a chief genetic genealogist at Parabon Nanolabs and founder of DNA Detectives. They have helped law enforcement solve more than 240 crimes. She did not work on the Brian Koberger case. He's the man that they believe killed the college students in Idaho. But she can certainly answer these questions we have about how they do this DNA genealogy tracing to find suspects. John and Ken, KFI AM 640, live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app. All right, our guest is Cece Moore, chief genetic genealogist at Parabon Nanolabs, founder of DNA Detectives. They have helped law enforcement solve more than 240 crimes. Now, they were not involved in the Brian Koberger case, which is the man suspected of killing the college students in Idaho, but she can certainly give us a lot of information about how they do this DNA tracing.
All right, so let's get her back on. So we talked about how the genealogy investigation works and how they use the databases of these companies that collect genetics. Now, they have these genetics, and what you say is then they have to look at the specifics of the case and match their list of possibilities to who owns a white Elantra, who's living in the general Moscow, Idaho area, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it really depends how much you have to work with. And as I've said, we're only working with about 2 million profiles that we can compare against. So who is in that database that's related to that suspect? If they were able to connect matches to both his mom's side and his dad's side, it would have pointed right at Brian and no one else, because he's the only son of those two parents. He doesn't apparently have any male siblings. If they only had enough data maybe for one side of his family, then that's when they might have had to look at more than one potential DNA contributor. We don't know what they had, of course. His family tree is full of a lot of relatively recent immigrants, and so that means there probably would have been less representation in the databases, because most people who take these tests have deep roots in the United States, and his family doesn't go that far back. So this could have been a really difficult investigative genetic genealogy project. And I think they would have been under a huge amount of pressure, of course, trying to identify him and get him under surveillance before he victimized anyone else. So they really deserve a huge debt of gratitude from us.
Let me ask you this about the crime scene, because something I read early on was, well, it could be difficult in this case because this was a party house. There'd be a lot of DNA in there. How do you differentiate the DNA between the possible criminal and just other people that were in that home, either partying or living there?
It's a great question, and we've had cases that I've worked where we identify the DNA contributor for the DNA that is sent to us, and it ends up being just contamination. It might be an officer's DNA or somebody who had other reasons for being at that house. And so that is applicable to this case, certainly since there were so many people going in and out and that had lived there previously. And so it really is going to depend on what kind of DNA. If it was his blood mixed with the victim's blood from perhaps the knife slipping, as I mentioned, that is, you know, pretty clear. That has to be from the suspect. If it was under the fingernails of one of the victims when they were trying to defend themselves, that would also be, you know, pretty clear tie to the crime.
So even though
if it was touch DNA or a hair, there could be other explanations. And that's why it doesn't just rely on DNA. They have to look at other aspects of the case. They're not going to go to court with just the DNA evidence.
So when the blood mixes, they could still isolate his part, because the blood flow was so heavy, if you remember, it was dripping out of the side of the home.
Yes. Yeah, it's called deconvolution. It happens quite a bit in crime scenes, particularly sexual assaults, where we have to extract out the victim's DNA to focus in on that unknown perpetrator's DNA. So it's something the labs that do this type of work are accustomed to doing. It's completely doable. Now, if you have multiple people in that mixture, say two of the victims that were in the same room, and his DNA, it gets more complicated. It's still doable, though, because two of those people are known. We know the victim's DNA. It can be extracted out. But we don't do that work. Scientists are doing that. And so we rely on trained scientists to prepare these files before we can perform investigative genetic genealogy on them.
All right. If they separate his DNA out at the crime scene from his blood being there, and it's a definitive match, and they present it in court, are there any cases you're aware of where the defense was still able to get around that fact and get some kind of acquittal?
So none of the cases that I've been involved in where the perpetrator was identified through investigative genetic genealogy in a case like that. We've had over 50 convictions in the cases that I've been involved in. What typically happens is the defense will try to bring up investigative genetic genealogy early on and object to it. And the court precedent that we've been seeing, what the judges have been deciding, is that the genetic genealogy is irrelevant to the case, because what matters is, did they get that one-to-one match from their traditional forensic profile, the one that is court admissible? And so far, we've seen judges ruling that it will not be presented as part of the trial in front of the jury. And hopefully we will continue with that, because genetic genealogy is, as I said, a lead generator, a tip. It is not evidence to be used against anyone in court. All of our cases have led to a conviction when they went to a jury trial, except one. In that case, it had nothing to do with the DNA. It was that the victim was a sex worker and the jury did not find her story credible. So we have had one exoneration, but it really had nothing to do with the work that we did or the DNA.
All right, Cece, thanks for talking to us. We really appreciate your input.
Yeah, this is fascinating stuff.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm always happy to talk about it and love educating the public on this.
Oh, sure. Sure. When something comes up, we'll call you again.
Hey, and upload to GEDmatch. Opt in, since you've tested.
All right, I'll do that.
All right. That's Cece Moore, chief genetic genealogist at Parabon Nanolabs, founder of DNA Detectives, helped solving over 240 crimes. But as you heard her say, which is important, that's what she was just telling John at the end, there's only a couple of these DNA genealogy websites which will cooperate with investigators in cases like the killer of the Idaho college students. It is a GED match or family tree DNA. There's only a couple million people in there. The ones that we more commonly know don't do it. Or they have to have your permission to do it or something like that.
That would be Ancestry.com or
23andMe.
23andMe are the two of the big ones.
Right. So we should all help out. Find these murderers. John and Ken, KFI AM 640, live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app.
We're on from 1 until 4 now, 1 until 4, and then you can hear the whole show on the iHeartRadio app. You go to podcasts and type in John and Ken on Demand, and you could hear that thing anytime you want. We just had Cece Moore on, and she does genealogy research.
Yeah, it's all about crime solving.
And
I've been involved in more than 240 cases, her company.
So after talking with her for half an hour, I just looked on my genealogy site, which I hadn't in a while, and they've updated my breakdown. I am now 87% Polish.
Surprise, surprise.
10% from the Baltics, which is Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia. I'm 2% German and 1% Jewish peoples of Europe.
Aha!
I'm 1% Jewish.
Look at that.
I didn't know that.
Hey, now.
Hey, we're brothers.
That's right.
There we go.
Even Mr. Sklar.
Is 1% enough? Does that get me in the club?
Yeah, you're Jewish.
Jew-ish.
Yeah, ish.
Jew-ish, that's right. It's a very slight 1%.
1%, well, maybe I could use it for something.
I want to take a moment to defend the vegan. Deborah Mark's not with us. She's out sick. She may be back next week. But you were ragging on her through texts because the killer, Brian Koberger, apparently is a beyond vegan,
right,
meaning he doesn't even want you to use pots for his food that were used to cook meat. Well, the only thing I want to say about that, it reminds me of another story we're going to do later. That became a headline on some websites. But did they ever catch a mass killer who was a prodigious meat eater and played that up in the story? That's all he did was eat hamburgers and steak night and day. This could explain his violent... No, but they have to stick the vegan thing in there, don't they?
Because a lot of people look at vegans as weirdos.
I know. And it's trying to reinforce...
Right.
They're nasty stereotypes.
Plus,
but
the other thing that matched her profile, Koberger never sleeps.
That's what it did say.
Yeah. Right. So we got a vegan that never sleeps. She popped in my mind immediately.
All right. Well, in case you don't know, we're under a state of emergency. There is another big storm. Take your pick. Atmospheric River, Pineapple Express, what? Coming our way tonight, tomorrow. It's going to be the heaviest of...
It sounds like
a
homeless alert. We have the
homeless, it's all purpose,
in the storm.
You're on call whenever we need you to scream with the emergency sirens.
That's right.
When necessary. That's you right there. So what was funny was when we played that a month ago, you didn't know that.
I didn't realize it was me. No.
It's you. Yes, he put you on a loop of your rants. So we go back to the other scare of the world from a couple of years back, because this is kind of a funny story. It's COVID-19. There are people at the airport from the CDC. They're with the Traveler Genomic Surveillance Program. They want to call that TGS for short. They walk around looking for people that have gotten off on planes at LAX from China, and they ask them if they can swab their nose.
Stick up the nose?
Stick up the nose,
oh,
people.
Oh, welcome to America.
Would you like to have that job?
Well, when they get back to China, they're going to get the swab on the anus.
Well, the reason is, in case you haven't heard, China's had another uptick in COVID cases. We never know what to believe out of that country because they try to tamp down a lot of the news.
They lie
about some
of
it now, thanks to technology and social media, does leak out. So right now, the CDC does require everybody coming from China to produce a negative coronavirus test before even getting on their flights. However, it can miss. It can miss anywhere from 30 to 70% of people
what
who are in the early
point,
stages of an infection.
What's the point of a test that could be wrong 70% of the time?
I don't know. That's me like getting the flu vaccine.
Yeah.
It could miss 70% of the time. What's the point? So that's why they're walking around with these sticks. They want to test them right on the site after they get up there. It's voluntary, though. You don't have to say yes.
No stick.
Yeah, you can say no to the stick. But apparently they smile. They're very nice.
Yeah, you know what? I don't care how much they smile. You're not putting a stick up my nose.
They come up to you like the old Hare Krishnas, and they tilt their head and they smile. And
pleasure me any way you want. You're not getting my nose.
It's not an anal stick, though, but it is a nose stick.
Ugh.
Because there's a story today from the lovely Daily Mail. What a headline. Chinese families have started burning bodies of their loved ones in the streets amid COVID explosion as corpses pile up in crematoriums and funeral homes. If you've heard this story 3 years ago, it was kind of the same story. Well, I remember that.
Right.
Bodies were piling up.
This is really interesting because they just loosened all their insane
They got rid of their zero COVID policy. Right.
And now they have an entire population and nobody has any immunity, right? Because everybody was locked down so severely for 3 years. On top of that, their vaccine sucked. It didn't work very well at all.
Not particularly effective.
And they wouldn't buy the vaccines from America. And so you have this huge population with no antibodies, either from vaccines or from a previous run-in with COVID, which means it's all virgin territory. And what happens when you have no antibodies, if you're in the right or wrong group, you're much more likely to have a severe illness. And so that's what's happening.
Yes, that's what's happening.
What's protecting us now, the reason we don't have high death rates even anymore, even though there's still a lot of COVID going around, is almost all of us, they think 95% of us have antibodies, either through getting it with or without symptoms or the vaccines. So China has just got nothing to protect itself.
COVID cases have surged in Shanghai. They estimate that 70% of the city's 25 million population have been infected recently. So that's what we're talking about here. And you're right. If it's a bad vaccine or a vaccine nobody got, and people were isolated and didn't pick up any kind of antibodies, this is like a fresh wave.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a debate early on, if you remember, whether, you know, you just let it rip, herd immunity, let everybody get it. And you know, try to isolate the ones that are going to be most vulnerable.
Yeah, the old people, right.
Yeah, so, I mean, we ended up
with underlying health conditions. That was the theory.
We ended up with a mishmash hybrid, and it added up to not complete herd immunity, but most people have some antibodies, so they're not likely to get seriously ill or die.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's some middle ground that we stumbled into. But you know,
one of the things that happened with them reducing the COVID restrictions, it's letting their people travel. So now they're wanting to go places around the world, and that's where the alarms are being raised.
Well, they're worried
what are going to do. The CDC is sending out people with nasal swabs.
Well, they're worried someone's going to bring in a variant that we don't have any protection against.
My question about this story is, if you walk up to somebody who just got off a plane from Beijing, right, and they agree to the swab, are you going to hold them there? Will you put it in the machine to see? And if it is positive, what do you do? Do you take them into custody or...
They didn't add anything else to the story.
They didn't. They just said they're there with the swabs for people. Or maybe they're just trying to collect data to see what percentage are coming in infected.
That's what I wondered. Is this just for statistics? And then after they analyze it, then they'll come in with a harsher crackdown, and shut off travel.
90% of them have COVID.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm at the point, like, if I get sick, I don't even want to know. I don't want to have to tell people, report it in a database, none of that. So you get sick, then you're not sick, and you just live your life.
Yeah, I'm still getting
life.
That notification asking me to join the contact thing, you know, that the state of California sends out. Yeah, I still get that text, and I still have to hit the button, dismiss, and then stop setting up. Right.
But they sent it to you anyway.
They're still sending it. Well, it just started again like a month ago. I had not gotten it for like a year, and all of a sudden it popped up again on my phone.
There's a whole government industry that's never going to go away.
All right, we got more coming up. John and Ken, KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
We're on from 1 until 4 now, 1 until 4, and you could hear the whole show at any time on the iHeartRadio app. Go to podcasts, type in John and Ken on demand, and you will get us on demand.
Well done. Well, if you're one of these people that walks around telling folks that ask, California has 40 million people. We're a big state. Well, the number's now 39 million. Yeah, we'll talk about it after the news at 4 o'clock. We led the charge for people leaving the state. Where'd they go? Have a guess. What state they went to?
Yeah.
Despite what Gib Dippity Doo likes to say about people are coming here for all sorts of reasons, that ain't the proof. So we'll talk about it after the news.
They're fleeing in big numbers.
Yeah.
There's no disputing it now.
People are shocked in Pasadena who knew a doctor by the name of Dharmesh Arvind Patel. 41 years old, he's a radiologist with Providence Holy Cross Medical Center in Mission Hills. Why are they shocked? Well, have you ever driven down Highway 1 in Northern California? It's pretty dramatic, isn't it?
Pretty scary.
He, in a Tesla, a Model Y to be exact, was in that Tesla with his wife and his two young children, and they drove right off a cliff. And according to rescuers, nobody survives that. The family did. They're actually in pretty good shape. But they believe that Patel did this on purpose in a murder-suicide attempt. And he has now been arrested. His wife, 41 years old, his 7-year-old daughter and 4-year-old son were in the car. Did you see pictures of the wreckage?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's shocking. I mean, to fall that far and hit that hard and nobody's even seriously injured.
One of the possibilities is that the Tesla Model Y has airbags everywhere. Front airbags, seat-mounted side airbags, and curtain airbags. All which appeared to inflate in the crash. They haven't confirmed that this helped save the family, but we think there's a good chance that it did.
Perversely, that's an incredible endorsement of a Tesla, right?
If you ever drive off a cliff.
You can't die in it even if you want to.
I mean, the footage is... the pictures, I'm looking at them right now. The car is just so mangled. You can see how the airbags look deployed there.
I'm thinking of all kinds of sick commercials, but I'll just control myself here.
Possibly. He's been charged with attempted homicide, child abuse. I did see a TV story this morning where they talked to neighbors. John, you know what they said.
What a nice family.
Actually, the reporter was showing a woman the story on the phone.
Yeah.
And she's looking down at the phone going, oh my God, no. The Patels? This can't be. Never saw any problems over there. Finally, one neighbor spoke up, which made me laugh.
Oh, they found one?
Well, what he said was, I noticed that their garbage had been out there for quite a while. They've been gone a while. That's it.
Thanks.
That's because they took this trip where it looked like he wanted to kill them all.
Sherlock Holmes.
This is 15 miles south of San Francisco. They actually call this Devil's Slide. It's known for fatal crashes.
Yeah. Yeah. PCH,
one battalion chief said, we go there all the time for cars over the cliff and the people never live. This was an absolute miracle. It flipped a few times before landing on its wheels, wedged against the cliff just feet from the water. And it went down 250 to 300 feet down the cliff.
I mean, what kind of a mental breakdown did this guy have?
That's what we don't know.
To take out his kids.
A radiologist, too. It's not like he... I know. It was a murder-suicide attempt, they
right.
believe.
Right. I mean, some darkness in his life. Just mental illness? Or, you know, does he think... did he gamble away all the family's money?
There's some untold story about his finances or...
Some weird sexual perversion that was going to be uncovered.
Basic old depression. Couldn't live with the pressure. A lot of people in the medical field often feel pressure. There's a lot of pressures.
Oh, yeah. He's a radiologist?
Radiologist, yeah.
I mean, it's not like you're working, like anesthesiologists, right? They work 24-hour shifts.
Right.
I know because we were once at a hospital, right? And the anesthesiologist, he was at the end of his 24-hour shift. And I'm thinking, I don't know if I want you putting anything in my wife. I mean, are you awake? You know what you're...
Yeah. Remember that story from like a month ago where apparently the anesthesiologist was on fentanyl?
Yeah.
And the guy woke up. The guy who's being operated on woke up. And he's like, well, he found out later, this guy uses fentanyl?
Yeah. I don't get the 24-hour shifts at a hospital. There's got to be a better way to schedule that.
No,
especially
exactly.
when you're having anesthesia and you can kill somebody with a tiny mistake.
Well, I imagine details will come out about what may have made this man this depressed that he wanted to take his own life and his two small children. And
Tesla Model Y, huh?
A Y, yes, which is kind of a smaller version of the X, which is kind of it's called a crossover.
You can't kill yourself even if you want to.
All right, coming up next, the exodus continues. The latest census number shows that the state of California is now officially 39 million people, not 40 million anymore. John and Ken, KFI AM 640, live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app.
Deborah Mark is out. Mark Ronner, live the 24-hour KFI newsroom.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you love Selena?
Like, really love?
Whether you saw her live, saw the movie as a kid, or saw her looks all over TikTok, there's no shortage of reasons to stan the Queen of Tejano.
And stan we do over 3 whole episodes of our podcast, Becoming an Icon.
We're reminiscing as lifelong Selena fans, sharing hot takes and telling her story. Listen to Becoming an Icon on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Becoming an Icon.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.